All right, back on the Young Turks. Casper's here, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian. Casper, our members of the day are Andy Fuentes and Abigail Loff. Of course, we're going to have a brilliant post game for them today. TYTnetwork.com/join. I interviewed Beto O'Rourke yesterday. Mm-hmm. He is running against Ted Cruz. He's a congressman from El Paso, Texas, and knows the name of every single city and state in Texas and county. And that camera was moving. Anyway, check that interview out because he's amazing, and I think he's going to be Ted Cruz, which is going to be awesome. So one more thing, Anna, before we get started. Tonight, I want everybody to know, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be showing a movie called Immigrant Prisons. Actually, you would love/hate this movie. You love the movie, but you hate what's going on. Mm-hmm. Using immigrants for slave labor. One guy, I think, was kept in immigrant prison for longer than 9 years.
It's insane.
It's absolutely insane, and it's private prisons. So Brave New Films did a wonderful job with it. We're going to show it, and we're going to have a panel discussion of it. But you can watch it with us, the movie and the panel discussion, at tytnetwork.com/live. tytnetwork.com/live. And that's tonight, like I said, 10:30 Eastern. Okay, Jennifer writes in, rolling on the floor laughing my ass off. Surely you know that already. Explaining what R-O-F-L-M-A-O is. Yes, generally speaking, I did know that. Okay, Dances With says, if you said to me, name every single word in there, I don't know that I would have won that bet. Anyway, Dances With says, there are no sound bites. Cenk is a master ventriloquist. Because they call
Cenk,
me mouth.
You've got to stop working out.
Okay, let's see.
Please forgive me if I'm being personal, but tell me about your sex life.
See, that was me.
Was that Pat Robertson?
Yes.
God, I love the soundboard sometimes. Not a lot, like not when you use it too much, but sometimes I love it.
Okay.
Yeah, brings back memories.
Antifa!
It's too soon.
too soon.
What's it called? Inside baseball on the soundboard. If you hear a soundbite with this squeak behind it, it's super old. Back when we couldn't control the sound of things and they came in, everything had a squeak. So that Tell Me About Your Sex Life one has a squeak, 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 squeak. If you can hear that, that's from way back in the day. Super back in the day.
All right, now you're going to make me play other random ones to see if they have the squeak. This is a guy who was doing gay conversion therapy.
Yes.
And this is a guy who would snuggle with other guys and rock back and forth as part of that therapy. And this is him hitting a pillow with a tennis racket, okay?
Mom! 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 Mom, why did you do that to me?
Okay, now I play you that because we have a story of a gay Jewish Nazi that had a similar issue later in this hour that you don't want to miss. And you're right, I heard the squeak. All right, what's next?
We start off with some rather tragic international news. A double car bombing occurred in Somalia over the weekend, killing more than 300 individuals and wounding more than 300 others. Now, the bombing has not been claimed by any terrorist organization, although there is some evidence to indicate that Al-Shabaab, an Islamist group, was behind the attack. Now, recent reporting by The Guardian and other news outlets indicate that the double car bombing was done in response to a US-led anti-terrorism mission that was carried out in August that unfortunately only killed civilians, 10 of which did die, others who were wounded. So let me give you the details on this latest attack. First, let me just say that this is the biggest terror attack bombing with the most victims in Somalia of all time, and so it was a story that deserved to be in the headlines of, you know, every major news outlet in the US, but it hasn't really gotten much coverage. Now, the man who killed more than 300 people with a truck bomb in the center of Mogadishu on Saturday was a former soldier in Somalia's army whose hometown was raided by local troops and US Special Forces 2 months ago in a controversial operation in which 10 civilians were killed. Now, initially, the US government indicated that they were attacking leaders of Islamist groups, these radicals who are dangerous. But reporting later indicated that no, that is not what happened. All of those individuals who died were in fact civilians. Following the raid, this is the raid that happened this past August, in which three children ages between 6 and 10 died, local tribal elders called for revenge against the Somali government and its allies, the United States being one of its allies. The 10 people were civilians. They were killed accidentally. The government and relatives will discuss about compensation. We send condolences to the families. That was according to one of the politicians in Somalia following that failed, you know, counterterrorism mission.
So real quick there, so just so we're absolutely clear, the Somali government admitted, yes, they were in fact civilians that were killed and it was totally botched. So there's no dispute about that. And in fact, they are offering what they call blood money to the relatives of the murdered civilians.
That's right.
And including the three kids' families, obviously. And they went, they got granular. They went all the way down to compensating them for their animals that were killed in the raid, etc. Now, earlier in today's show, I gave US Special Forces a lot of credit for the work that they did in Raqqa and retaking that city. But from time to time, it goes disastrously wrong, as it did in this case. And if ever there was a case of us killing civilians with by accident, we hope, obviously, and in this case, I think it was, coming back to haunt us and our allies, boy, this is it. This is as bad a case as you can get. Now, you know, we make fun of Joe Scarborough because he famously once said, when he's trying to figure out why Islamic radicals do terrorism, he said, I don't know, they hate us because they hate us. And he repeated it three times. No, oftentimes they hate us because we killed one of their family members.
Right.
In fact, we have stats about that later in this particular story.
Right, we do. And so I want to back up a little bit because there's a lot of context that I think a lot of Americans are unaware of because stories like this don't get attention. So do most Americans know what we're doing in Yemen or what we're doing in Somalia? Probably not. And the reality is, you know, drone strikes began in Yemen and Somalia under the Obama administration. And he got criticized for that on this show on a regular basis. However, the drone strikes have been amplified under the Trump administration. He has essentially lifted combat restrictions and opened the floodgates for more drone strikes in Somalia and in Yemen. And so in Somalia, there has been a civil war raging since 2009. And it is a war against the government of Somalia, which is aiming for a more secular country. And you know, various Islamic groups, Al-Shabaab being one of them. And so Al-Shabaab throughout the civil war has basically taken over certain parts of Somalia. And then because of you know, US involvement and other international countries getting involved, they have lost certain territories. And it goes on and on and on. But one thing that you should keep in mind is after this US-led counterterrorism effort in August that led to the deaths of these 10 civilians, some of which were children, Al-Shabaab used imagery of their dead bodies in order to recruit individuals into their terrorist organization. And so we have to be careful with what we're doing. You have to make sure the intel is foolproof and that you're not killing innocent civilians and essentially being incredibly counterproductive in this foreign policy.
So look, the guy who did the bombing is the one most responsible. Of course, no one's taking away responsibility from him. At the same time, actions have consequences, so let's be careful about our actions. And I gotta be honest with you, I used to be more of an interventionist. So the situation in Somalia is really difficult, and if the government asks us for help in fighting Islamic radicals, I am very, very tempted to give them that help because I don't want Islamic radicals taking over Somalia or other countries. On the other hand, when we intervene, we have made one mess after another after another. And so at what point do we realize that intervention is generally counterproductive? And here we are again on another day when it has been wildly counterproductive.
This form of intervention is wildly counterproductive. And so I'm not saying that, you know, we shouldn't ever get involved if there are terrorist organizations that are taking over entire countries, overthrowing, you know, secular governments or whatever it is. But I am saying that if you are going to utilize, you know, different military methods, like drone strikes, for instance, it's not, you know, some frivolous thing. You have to be careful with the type of intel you have when you're trying to take people out. If you're killing innocent civilians, it will come and bite you, you know, in the behind. And that's exactly what's happening here. Now, let's go to the double car bombing that happened this past weekend. Let's give you some details. Officials say that it involved two vehicles, a Toyota Noah minivan and a much larger truck carrying around 772 pounds of military grade and homemade explosives. The target for both vehicles was the heavily guarded airport compound in Mogadishu, where the United Nations, most embassies, and the headquarters of the 22,000 strong African Union peacekeeping force, AMISOM, are based. So this was an intentional attack against, you know, different government agencies and also international agencies that are supportive of the current Somali government. And so, of course, these Islamist terrorists are trying to target them and take them out. The minivan was stopped at a checkpoint several hundred meters short of its target, and the driver detained. The bomb later detonated, possibly set off by remote control or by security officials. I also want to note that as of Monday, around 167 bodies were buried, and they were unidentified because they were so badly burned that the government couldn't identify who the victims were. Also, the bigger truck bomb was detonated at a busy crossroads at least a kilometer from the Medina Gate. The explosion ignited a fuel truck nearby, which caused a massive fireball.
So let me give a couple more pieces of context here. First of all, let's also note that in May, when this raid happened,
August.
Oh, okay.
There have been a number of raids, but the one in August led to the 10 civilians being killed.
Okay, so the one in May led to two of our troops being wounded and a U.S. Navy SEAL being killed. So it's not just Somali civilians that are dying here, but our guys also died. So none of this has gone well at all. But I think the most important stat is the one I really wanted to give you guys. The United Nations did a study on why people join up with radical groups and commit acts of terrorism. Of the more than 500 former members of militant organizations interviewed for the report, 71% pointed to, quote, government action, including, quote, killing of a family member or friend, or arrest of a family member or friend, as the incident that prompted them to join a group. So when people say, I don't know why they do it, well, it turns out we actually have decent evidence as to why they do it. 71% of the time, which is an overwhelming majority, it's because someone they know was either arrested or killed by a government they then later got radicalized against and committed a terrorist act against. So some of the issues are certainly complicated, but there are also some simple explanations. You kill someone's family member, they're gonna wanna kill you. That's kind of how it works. And that is why intervention that we have done for decades and decades in the Middle East has backfired on us. Because the more people we kill, the more people they want to kill in return. And that's the state of play right now.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, some news out of the US, including a popular book getting banned by one school district. We'll tell you which book it is.
Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Filter not installed, a good Twitter handle, says on the serious issue about the shooting, he says, I totally agree with JR. If you notice the cops say, I got him, as if it's some sort of accomplishment, that makes me sick. Admiral Marsden says, they say no one is above the law unless you're a cop, a politician, or a rich white person. Truly, this case and others prove it. Now on to a lighter note, Matthew Veslag says, was kind of hoping Cenk would go on a tirade after that camera moved. Hashtag fuck it, we'll do it live. Okay. There's insanity in the control room tonight. And I should have said it at the time. I missed that opportunity. You're right. Jin Ho Choi says the war on terror is a for-profit business.
Yep.
And unfortunately, he's right. All right, what's next, Hannah?
All right. A school district in Mississippi has decided to ban To Kill a Mockingbird from the reading list for its eighth grade students. Now, this isn't the first time To Kill a Mockingbird has received some criticism, backlash, or threats of a ban. However, the reason that school officials have given is fascinating, to say the least. So there have been more than 300 formal complaints against this book, and they've been reported by schools, colleges, and public libraries last year alone. And a lot of it has to do with some of the language that's used and also a theme that's used in the book, which is, of course, if you've read To Kill a Mockingbird, it has to do with a black man who's been falsely accused of rape. So there's sexual content in it as well. Now, a school administrator, a member of the school board to be specific, said there is some language in the book that makes people uncomfortable. So the N-word does appear in the book nearly 50 other times throughout Mockingbird, almost always in dialogue. The novel won its author a Pulitzer Prize for fiction and made the values of the civil rights movement, particularly a feeling for the god-awful unfairness of segregation, real for millions. And that was written by the Washington Post. And so it's just, go ahead, jump in. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, so look, the real reason that the book is banned in a lot of places is because it makes people in the South uncomfortable. It's about what happened in the 1930s in Alabama. That's where it's set. And it was released in 1960. Let me read you a part of what they explain in the book. So if you read the full context of the book, you'll understand that that it's not like the N-word is used in a positive way. No, it explains why it's so wrong. And that's part of what gets under some people's skin. So in one part of the book, the girl asks her father, what exactly is an N-lover? He says, it's hard to explain. And then he goes on to say, it's ignorant, trashy people use it when they think somebody's favoring Negroes over and above themselves. It slipped into usage with some people like ourselves when they want a common, ugly term to label somebody. So the book is incredibly clear on what a terrible word it is, and the people that use it are trash. So that gets under some people's skin. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, oh, what are you saying about Alabama? First of all, it's Alabama from the 1930s. If you're taking it personally, there's some chance there's something wrong with you. Because it should be something you're saying, oh, well, thank God they wrote that book and showed how ugly racism was. And now we in Alabama and other places in the country are beyond it. Mm-hmm. But obviously we're not, because they're still trying to ban the book in so many different places in the country.
Right, exactly. So the recent example was in Biloxi, Mississippi. That is the school district that is calling for a ban on To Kill a Mockingbird. And when I say ban, it means that it's being taken off of the reading list for the eighth grade class. And look, I think that it's important to read these types of books, because not only are they classics, but it reminds you of, you know, what the history of the country was. Even though it's a fictional book, it still touches on historical themes in the US. And it shows that, hey, you know, we have progressed somewhat, but more importantly, we have a dark past and we don't want to go back to that dark past. The only way you prevent, you know, the cruel treatment that we experienced in history is to learn history. And what we're seeing right now is like this whitewashing of American history that I think is damaging. Go ahead.
I just want to say real quick that, you know, look, I imagine some African Americans could get upset at seeing the word 50 different times. But the overwhelming majority of African Americans are in favor of the book and want the book taught. And part of what the book did so well and why it was such a classic was it took the racist tropes of the past, things like you would see in The Birth of a Nation, where they have a man in blackface going around raping white women, and turned it on its head and showed that it was wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's these assumptions made about African Americans and it isn't true. And so that's why the huge, huge percentage of African Americans are, of course, in favor, not only just in favor of teaching the book, but quite upset, as Dion Cole was recently. He's a star, one of the stars of Blackish, and he so mad that they're taking the book away, especially in the South.
So we have a video of him kind of talking about this a little bit. He was at LAX, the airport, and he was approached by TMZ, and here's what he had to say about this whole debacle.
Why do they keep trying to change history and trying to make it? They're trying to get it to the point where nothing ill has ever happened to black people ever in life. They're trying to make it that way. They like living in a fantasy right now, where they like, yo, they thinking that they're trying to take everything away. That's bull. That's BS, man. That's bullshit. That happened in history. You got to keep that in there. Why would you take that away? Because then that shows black people where they came from, and it gives them more purpose to be proud of who they are and how we overcome. Just like Mark Twain, he was trying to get rid of Mark Twain, but no, keep all them niggas in the book, keep all of them in there. Just to show kids coming up how many niggas they thought we was.
Yeah, look, at the end there, he's does comedy and he's being funny, but they followed him for quite some time.
Yeah,
he had a lot to say about this, which I liked. But he reminded me of something and made a great point in the beginning there, which is that it's funny that when you try to take Confederate monuments down, they say, you got to preserve history. You got to, hey, history happened, you can't deny it. But when you talk about how blacks were mistreated in the South, like in To Kill a Mockingbird, as it shows, I don't know. Do we really have to show that side of history? I mean, aren't we, you progressives like to talk about that too much.
I know, but like, here's the thing, that this story is not an isolated case, right? You have to put everything into context. And if you look at, you know, this war against educating kids that's being pursued by conservatives, then you see why they're doing this and what their intentions are. So I'll give you other examples. The Texas Board of Education. The Texas Board of Education has been fighting aggressively to get rid of civil rights leaders from its history books and from its social studies classes. So they want to replace civil rights leaders with conservative individuals like Phyllis Schlafly. Okay, so instead of learning about Cesar Chavez or other individuals who led very important movements in our nation's history, we would learn about a religious zealot who would just preach hate and try to control people's bodies and lives with her particular religion. Which, by the way, I don't have a problem learning about Phyllis Schlafly either, but I think it's important to also learn about our civil rights leaders. So the Texas Board of Education doing that is disastrous, because most of the textbooks that are printed in the country are printed in Texas. So it wouldn't just have this chilling effect on education in the state of Texas, it would have a chilling effect in the entire country, right? And then when you talk about those Confederate statues, I mean, think about it. There is a concerted effort to whitewash our Confederate history as well, the Civil War, and make it seem as though it had nothing to do with racism or slavery. It had everything to do with slavery. You know, they'll use euphemisms like, no, it was all about property rights. Okay, but what was the property? Oh yeah, black people, your slaves. So
I mean, Anna, was slavery really racist though? There's a story we'll do tomorrow because it came out too late, right before the show, about a guy who says, thank God white people took over this country instead of black people. He says, I'm not a racist. That's kind of like the definition of racism. They're amazing, man. They'll say anything and then add, but I'm not a racist. All right, which leads us to our Nazi story.
Yes. Kevin Wilshaw was a white nationalist leader. In fact, he was an organizer for the National Front since the 1980s. However, very recently, I'm talking about this year, he decided to denounce Nazis and come out as gay. Turns out that his mom was also Jewish.
Drums.
Okay, so let's take a look at this gentleman. There's Kevin Wilshaw right there. And as recently as January, he was preaching hate. But he has come to a different conclusion. He's had a change of heart. And here's what he has to say. By the way, this is an individual in the UK. So the UK is also grappling with similar themes that we have here in the United States. He said, on one or two occasions in the recent past, I've actually been the recipient of the very hatred of the people I want to belong to. If you're gay, it is acceptable in society. But with these groups of people, it's not acceptable. And I found on one or two occasions when I was suspected of being gay, I was subjected to abuse. Well, congratulations. I'm glad you came to that conclusion. He also says, and I'm glad he realizes this. It's a terribly selfish thing to say, but it's true. I saw people being abused, shouted at, spat out in the street. It's not until it's directed at you that you suddenly realize that what you're doing is wrong.
No, Kevin, for the rest of us, it doesn't take it happening to us for us to empathize with other human beings. If I see someone being spit on or attacked in the street, my instinct is to go help them. Your instinct was to take part in that. And only, I mean, how old are you? Jesus Christ, after being a neo-Nazi for decade after decade after decade, you finally realize, oh my God, what if it happens to me? That hurts my feelings. Really? Wow, thank you for figuring that out, Sherlock Holmes. And so yeah. I have almost no sympathy for this guy at all. Why I love this story is because what I always tell you guys, these guys have deep-seated problems. So they're not neo-Nazis in this day and age because they're mentally healthy and they have a good self-identity. No, there's some. Usually it is something that they loathe about themselves. And so, you know, that the fact it is he was partly Jewish obviously was an issue for him for whatever insane reason. But probably the fact that he was gay wasn't a bigger issue. And he points out, and turns out at National Front, there's a lot of gay leaders. To which I say, of course! Of course, it's not, look, part of me doesn't like talking about that because I feel like there's such a disgrace to other members of the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. But almost no one does more damage than closeted gays. You know, you hear Roy Cohn in America, J. Edgar Hoover in America, and the list goes on, and they target other gays most of all because it's something they hate about themselves.
It's not only is it something that they hate about themselves, I think that they're so obsessed with hiding that secret about their identity that they lash out at other gays and in a way to kind of like cover for themselves, right? But in reality, like, the more I see people like this lashing out at specific communities, the more I question them. And that's not to say that, you know, all people who are filled with this type of hatred are gay. That's crazy.
Right.
And that's not what we're trying to say. But it is fascinating to hear this from him. And it is fascinating to get some insight into these groups by what he's saying. Because he also talks about how, yes, there are other members of the National Front who are gay. And they're openly gay. But there's a hierarchy in that type of group. And the higher you are in that hierarchy, the more likely it is that people will make excuses for you if you do happen to be gay. Or they'll say things like, oh, but he's not really gay, right?
Or they'll say he's gay, but he's okay. Like, because he hates other people so much that he's okay even though he's gay and we're supposed to hate him. So look, I just want to give you the last couple of quotes here that I thought were really instructive from what Kevin Wilshaw said. He said, I didn't have many friends at school. I wanted to be a member of a group of people that had a name, And I thought getting involved in that kind of thing would be comradeship. And so this is exactly what I tell you about whether it's Islamic terrorists or mass shooters in America or people who join hate groups. They're just looking for some sort of purpose in life. And they're usually losers. I'm not the one to pick on the guy who's lonely at school, absolutely not, or to help, etc. But they're filled with this rage inside, and they're like, oh, look, these other guys are full of rage too, but at least I fit in here, right?
It's a sense of community. It's the same type of gang mentality that we all learn about when we're younger, right? The reason why a lot of people join gangs is because they feel like, okay, this is a sense of family, this is a sense of community that their life might be lacking. And that's the sense that I got from him. And he wanted that sense of community so badly that he was willing to, you know, really hide his identity and live the way that he lived for so long. I mean, he's an older guy and he had to hide his sexual orientation because of all this. And look, I don't know whether or not I want to like shun him and criticize him, or if I want to be a little more open-minded, because at least he did have a change of heart. I know it was later in life, but it is maddening that it isn't until they experience hatred themselves that they wake up and realize, oh, maybe my behavior is unacceptable.
Maybe I'm a bad guy here, but I'm finding it really hard to empathize with this
guy. I hear you.
He also, by the way, committed acts of violence and he admits that. So when he was beating up on other people, well, that was hunky-dory and it was so cool to be a neo-Nazi. Oh my God, you don't like me because of who I am? Oh, well then I'm gonna leave the group after decades of this. Look, last two quotes. He said, even though you end up being a group of people that through their own extreme views are cut off from society, you do have a sense of comradeship in that you're a member of a group that's being attacked by other people. So I think that phenomenon can't be underestimated. There's so many people who feel like even though hey, I'm part of the alt-right and you know it seems like the rest of society doesn't think that racism is awesome and that women should have equal rights or whatever, right? But at least I'm part of this group and everybody else is attacking us, that means we must be right. Rush Limbaugh says that all the time. So many people attack me, I must be right. Mm-hmm. It's like a weird, perverse thing, but they get at least unity out of that and they feel like we're dirtbags together, okay?
Yeah.
And in fact, the last quote from him is fascinating. He said, I'm going to find it difficult, granted, to fill a void that has occupied my life since childhood. So even though he knows that the neo-Nazis hate him for being gay and for being Jewish,
he's going to miss being
he's gonna
part
miss
of the community.
Them.
Yeah.
He's going to miss being a Nazi. It's amazing.
I don't know if he's going to miss being a Nazi, but he's going to miss that sense of community. And so that's the reason why I'm having a hard time, you know, being 100% negative toward him, because it does, at this stage in his life, after he's victimized people and he's probably hated by pretty much everyone, it is difficult to shun the one group that did accept you, right?
Until they decided to hate you as well.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah.
So
look, yeah, please be a better person than me and be accepting of people who see the right way. But man, I'm finding it hard. So reap what you sow. I mean, I'm not going to shed any tears for you because you miss your neo-Nazi buddies.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, if you're in a group that's attacking your identity, get out. Get out right now. Don't come crying 20 years later. All right. Look, guys, we're out of time for the radio show, but we are going to continue online because there's two stories that are phenomenal. One is what Jim Baker has said to his trolls. He's a televangelist and it is freaking hilarious,
yeah.
Okay? And then the second story is super important. It's the Me Too movement, women coming, a prominent woman coming out, talking about sexual harassment and abuse that they have faced. I think that it is a game changer culturally. Mm-hmm. So tytnetwork.com/live, we're gonna continue in just a little bit. And then of course tonight at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, we're gonna have watch the movie Immigrant Prison together. So also watch that and we gotta go. So we'll see you after the break. Hey, Bart, is there a reason why we've been doing flamenco music the whole time? Is it in honor of Catalonia or something, or and their separation?
No, the world's just heavy. I'm just lightening the load.
All right. All right, God bless, God bless. We just heard from Irina that Janine Moss had us in another story in CNN. She is the best.
She is the best. And not because she uses us in her content, but because her reports are always awesome.
Yeah. I'm just gonna read two quick tweets and then we gotta go. We'll do the last couple stories for you guys. Nick says, about To Kill a Mockingbird, sounds like a bunch of snowflakes got their feelings hurt by a great piece of literature. And Mixed Pancake says, I'm gay and I never once thought in the past before coming out, damn, I'm in the closet, I should terrorize people that are. Right?
Yeah.
I know. But people are maddening. Okay, by the way, one other thing, guys, don't forget in Vegas, tomorrow, what happens in Vegas shouldn't stay in Vegas. Tomorrow we're covering the Unity Reform Commission for the DNC. So if you're in Vegas, go to tytnetwork.com/getupdates or just show up at Bally's at 12:30. And you can actually watch the whole thing. And if you're not in Vegas, you could watch it here, youtube.com/TYT, starting at 4 o'clock Eastern. Okay? And we'll do double streaming tomorrow. All right, okay. What's next?
Let's start with Jim Baker, and then we'll do the Me Too campaign.
Yep.
Jim Baker is a disgrace. Televangelist. He's disgraced because he has spent time in prison for accounting fraud, and he also paid a woman $279,000 in hush money after he allegedly raped her. So, not a great guy. And he used to make a ton of money off of being a televangelist. But then he said that he hates prosperity gospel preachers and he thinks that they're frauds.
Ironic.
And now he somehow miraculously is a televangelist again after spending nearly 5 years in prison. And he says he's not scamming people. He's just selling them doomsday food for when the apocalypse happens.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was running a legit business now, Anna. Okay. Oh, so he's a reformed, I see. Well, because when doomsday comes, you're going to need the protein shakes.
You're going to need the protein shakes. You're going to need those underground bunkers. All right, so why is he in the news today? Well, apparently some people are ruffling his feathers and he's tired of it. He's tired of people watching him. He's tired of people mocking him. And so he's got some strong words for you, okay? Let's take a look.
Even Satan and donkeys talk to God.
Right, that's right.
The only ones that probably aren't talking to God these days are some mean people in America. Mm. And people who just are anti-Christ. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to hear it, just shut me off. Especially you folks that monitor me every day to try to destroy me. But just go away. You don't have to be there. You don't have to hear it. But one day you're going to shake your fist in God's face. Mm. And you're going to say, God, why didn't you warn me? And he's going to say, you sat there and you made fun of Jim Baker all those years. I warned you, but you didn't listen.
I love the idea of, I'm visualizing it like, God, why didn't you warn me? And he's going to mention Jim Baker. That's what's going to happen, Jim Baker. Wow.
Well, you murdered 7 people and ate their body parts, plus you were mean to Jim Baker. Or you're a wonderful human being. You help the poor, the needy, just like Jesus told you. But you were mean to Jim Baker. Sorry, hell it is. God, why didn't you warn me?
Oh, gosh. The most amazing part about all of this is that even after everything that he's done in the past, people are still into him.
Yeah, I know. They still give him money. It's amazing. So, I mean, how do you listen to any of that? Oh, God. When he's
but,
like,
but even donkeys talk to God.
That's where I was going.
Donkeys talk to God.
No, but my favorite was the woman in the background going, that's true. Donkeys talk to God. That's true. I saw it on Shrek. They'll start to dragons fall in love with them sometimes. I saw it with my own eyes. Donkeys talk to God. And notice, by the way, the people who monitor him,
I didn't even know he existed.
I know.
So it's kind of funny that like he feels like he's under attack.
Yeah,
right?
He's like, don't monitor me. Why? If you're not doing anything wrong, what difference does it make if they're monitoring you? So just you got another viewer. Try to sell him a protein shake. Okay. Anyway, he's like, even Satan listens to God. But the people who are monitoring him are worse than Satan because they're mean to Jim Baker.
We're mean to Jim Baker.
It's only one thing worse than Satan. That's trolling Jim Baker.
You know, look.
And they're not even trolling him. All they do is those right-wing watch and whoever else he's referring to, they just put up clips of him and then we all laugh. That's it.
But here's the thing. If laughing at Jim Baker, if there was truth behind what he said, and one day after the apocalypse, I will be face to face with God himself, and he tells me, you're going to go to hell and burn in eternal damnation because you were mean to Jim Baker, I feel like it's worth it.
Like, and you know what? If I love what you're saying, it's true. Like, I'm in the afterlife. and all of a sudden I see donkeys talking to God, and we're like, fuck it, color me surprised. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
No, no, you were right. I was wrong. There's talking donkeys. They're talking to God, and God is really pissed about what I said about Jim Baker.
He's going to play this audio.
That's right.
On that day when we're confronted by him, he's going to be like, you remember when you said this, when you said it was worth it to criticize Jim Baker?
And you know what? Look, last thing. Religious folks, I love you guys, but really, how do you believe this stuff? Okay. So, there's so many parts of the stories I can't understand. You're talking to God and you're shaking your fist at him. If I saw God, I'd be like, my bad, dude. I didn't know. I wouldn't be like, God, let me tell you something about you and your talking donkey.
I don't think I've ever shaked my fist at anyone. And there have been situations where I've been very angry and there's no fist shaking.
Okay, and so Moses splits the Red Sea and the raining frogs and all that stuff. They wander in the desert for a while. To be fair, it was quite some time. And then they're like, oh no, Moses is full of shit. He split the Red Sea, okay? He rained frogs on people.
Yeah.
He had God kill the firstborn sons. And they're like, not buying it, right? I shake my fist at you, God. Okay, so on this earth, go ahead and be mean to Jim Baker. You don't even have to be mean. Let's just have fun.
Let's just watch his clips.
That's it, that's all. And if it turns out there is a God, whatever you do, don't shake your fist at him. Okay.
All right. Moving on. A new campaign has emerged on social media known as the Me Too campaign, where women of all stripes are sharing their experiences with sexual assault and sexual harassment. Now, a number of big name A-list celebrities are also sharing their stories, which I think is incredibly powerful because, first of all, the volume, the number of women who are coming forward is incredibly shocking. But also, these are women who, have pretty successful careers. And hearing their story is important because it shows that it doesn't matter how successful you've been or how unsuccessful you've been in the industry, you could have been victimized by people like Harvey Weinstein. So Reese Witherspoon was a more recent example of an individual who shared her story. She was at the Elle Women in Hollywood event, and she said the following. I have my own experiences that have come back to me very vividly, and I have found it hard to sleep, hard to think, hard to communicate. A lot of the feelings I've been having about anxiety, about being honest, the guilt for not speaking up earlier or taking action. She also says, and I wish I could tell you that was an isolated incident in my career. She had been sexually assaulted by a director when she was 16, but sadly it wasn't. I've had multiple experiences of harassment and sexual assault, and I don't speak about them very often. But after hearing all the stories these past few days and hearing these brave women speak up tonight, the things that we're kind of told to sweep under the rug and not talk about, it's made me want to speak up and speak up loudly because I felt less alone this week than I've ever felt in my entire career.
I think that right there is a tipping point. Mm-hmm. And so I don't mean just her statement, but that feeling that now other women have that says, you know what? Okay, they had the courage to speak up. I'm going to have the courage. And we're all going to talk about it because we need to end this. And I think this is a cultural shift that is enormous. It can't be overstated. So it started with Bill Cosby, then Roger Ailes, Donald Trump, Harvey Weinstein,
Bill O'Reilly,
all these stories of serial sexual harassers. 16 women came out against Donald Trump, over 50 women for Bill Cosby, Roger Ailes, dozens of women, so many different settlements, tens of millions of dollars in settlements, and it goes on and on. And so now Reese Witherspoon is not talking about Harvey Weinstein, but she's saying, look, it's not just Harvey Weinstein, it's not just these prominent figures. It was a lot of people who did it to a lot of women. And so they don't feel alone anymore. And I think that is the most important part. So my sense from having talked to many women and obviously seeing all of this unfold is that it is a way larger problem than men realize. And there's good reason for that, so let me explain.
Not just men, that people in general realize, because I didn't realize how rampant this was, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that pretty much every big name celebrity that we know has some, you know, pretty devastating experience with sexual assault within the industry.
Yeah, but it's not just the industry, and it's not just celebrities.
Yeah.
Because if some percentage of men, I would like to think and hope that it is a smaller percentage of men. I don't know what the number is. I don't know if it's 10 or 20%. I don't know what the number is. But do it so often that it does not affect 10 or 20% of women. It affects a much larger percentage, 60% of women. Again, the numbers are not, look, we've done previous studies. I don't have them at my fingertips here. And I think those studies are undercounting because so many people were afraid to come out. Mm-hmm. So I'm just stating it as a general concept that it affects more women. So most men think, I don't know anyone that was affected because they didn't speak out.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. So they assume that it doesn't happen that often. But a lot of women who have experienced it know that it happens way more often than they realize. And if you haven't been personally affected by it, you might also underestimate it.
Right. And another thing that, you know, educated me more on this issue was the fact that the vast majority of women who have shared their stories keep talking about the guilt that they felt, mm-hmm. right? And I always, whenever we talk about people who don't report sexual assault, it's always because society will usually attack them or bash them, and they'll meet them with, you know, insane skepticism. However, I realize that while that is part of the reason why people don't come forward, it also has to do with the fact that they feel responsible for being victimized. Like they think, oh my God, I must have done something to deserve this. And imagine living with that for years. I mean, Reese Witherspoon, I mean, is an older woman now. I mean, and I don't mean that to you know what I'm saying? This happened when she was 16. So she's been living with this
since
she was 16.
She's 41 now.
Exactly. She's 41 now. So she's been living with this for decades. That's what I'm trying to say. And imagine struggling with that internally for such a long period of time and feeling guilt over something that you shouldn't feel guilty about.
And so, which leads us to the America Ferrera story.
Right. So America Ferrera also shared her story on social media, Instagram to be specific. And she said, first time I can remember being sexually assaulted was when I was 9 years old. I told no one and lived with the shame and guilt, thinking all along that I, a 9-year-old child, was somehow responsible for the actions of a grown man. He would smile at me and wave, and I would hurry past him, my blood running cold, my guts carrying the burden of what only he and I knew. That he expected me to shut my mouth and smile back. Ladies, let's break the silence so the next generation of girls won't have to live with this bullshit.
It's powerful, man. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is now unstoppable. And it's a great thing that we've hit this tipping point, because the more of a spotlight that you put on it, the better we are at addressing it and hopefully beginning to fix it. So look, there was terrible things going on in the 1970s when I had a great childhood, and we would just bike around the neighborhood, and then we didn't have much adult supervision. We thought everything was hunky-dory. In reality, there was way more crime back then, mm-hmm. and there was a lot more child molestation back then. But what wound up happening is we put a spotlight on it, and many other factors led to the reduction of crime, but certainly to the things we didn't know was happening behind the scenes.
Right.
And now this is the next giant thing. Mm-hmm. It, just the fact that we covered it up and didn't talk about it didn't mean it didn't exist. It existed at a mass scale. And so now that we're these wonderful, courageous, brave women are putting a spotlight on it, I think that we might be on the road to fixing it.
I hope. Yes, and I also want to add one other thing. So we know that, you know, based on the number of people who have come forward, this appears to disproportionately, you know, affect women. But there have been men in Hollywood coming forward too about their stories in regard to sexual assault. And so, wow.
I think that number is going to get way, way higher, because it's when you have men in positions of power. And in Hollywood, a lot of times absolute power, but not that many movies made. There's not that many starting roles. Mm-hmm. There's not that many music bands, etc. So those gatekeepers had enormous power. And no matter what their orientation is, unfortunately, they often abused it.
Right.
So I think that the next shoe that is going to drop is a lot more guys coming out about what happened in Hollywood too. But remember, this isn't just about Hollywood. Unfortunately, it affects all of society. So let's all speak out together and so that we can get on the road to recovery. All right, we're out of time here. We do have a post-game show for you guys. Catch that and all the network shows ad-free. If you're a member, tytnetwork.com/join.
Bye-bye.